Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and today is a Consumer Protection Day to start the show. We'll learn about the latest scams with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke. Michelle is the administrator of the DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having us, Larry.
Michael is the director of DATCAP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. And Michael, good to have you back as well.
Thanks for having us.
And, of course, as we talk with Michelle and Michael, want to hear from you. Have you received any odd phone calls recently? Let us know how you're staying safe on the Internet. Questions or maybe an experience to share, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Michelle, let's start with you. You know, we're both sports fans, and we've got the Packers. The draft, the NFL draft, is coming to Green Bay in a couple of weeks or so. And that means a lot of people are going to be there. And this morning, I got a news release from you folks about some things to watch out for when you attend that draft.
Yeah, we absolutely want to get the word out so people are really enjoying themselves at the draft and taking advantage of this maybe once-in-a-lifetime experience that will be happening in Green Bay. But scammers are also going to try and take advantage of those who are attending, and we are concerned about the opportunity for identity theft. People will be traveling in from other states, traveling in from around the state to Green Bay, just tons of people there, and so there's going to be lots of opportunities where scammers can try and take advantage of misinformation, if you will, or opportunities to attend. So we want people to be sure that they are hanging on to their personally identifiable information, their name, their date of birth, their contact information, and not just freely giving it in a survey.
Or, you know, they always have, though, these little booths where, you know, sign up and maybe win a prize or something, but you have to give all that information to do it.
Right. So feel confident who you are engaging with. You know, if it's someone at a booth and maybe it's a well-known organization that wants to get you on a mailing list so you can be part of their organization in the future, okay, if you're confident it's them. But if it's a one-off, or maybe it's an online opportunity to attend the big event or something like that. So prize giveaways, online quizzes, surveys, be watchful and mindful of fake and imposter websites, apps that misrepresent that they are connected or affiliated with the draft in any way, apps that ask you to give permission to the device itself, and so you can get other information off that device. The big thing, remember that you don't need a ticket to attend the draft, the 2025 Draft Experience Fan Festival, or the draft campus. You need to register. Your reliable source of information should be the NFL OnePass app that they have developed. That's going to give you all the information that you need to know. Or go to NFL.com/draft access. That's your other online place for reliable information. And then this applies all the time when you're traveling.
Sure.
As often as possible, use your credit card. Because there you will get extra protections under federal regulations. And if you end up with identity theft with your credit card, it's usually from a card skimmer where someone is at an ATM or a gas station reader or some self-service station. They're reading the card. Maybe they're getting your PIN number. But you can take action with the credit card company then if they gain access to that. It's not your Social Security number and everything else. There's a faster shutdown and responsibilities with your credit card company there. And we really encourage, when possible, using tap to pay. A lot of people don't like that, and I get confused. It's just easier to slide the card in and wait with the chip. But the tap to pay has extra safety features built into it where it's harder to read that information. And so if your card doesn't have that feature, call your credit card company, see if you can get a new card with these updated safety measures where it will issue it with the tap to pay. Because there are still some out there that haven't caught up based on expiration dates.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of times, not recently, but I can remember a couple of times when I just wasn't thinking about it, and I slid it. And then the person said, well, no, that won't work. You have to tap it. And I thought, oh, well, that's good.
Oh, yeah, that is nice. I mean, there's the old-fashioned slide feature. Yeah. There's the insert with the chip and pin where it engages. Yeah. And then there's the tap to pay. So tap to pay being best, then the chip, and then slide.
So be careful out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy yourself. Have a good time. Take advantage of this experience. We'll have in future weeks some things to be mindful of as it relates to transportation scams that we are on the watch for as well with these crowds coming in.
And speaking of transportation, Michael, I have... I've gotten, I don't know, maybe 40 notes, text messages that I have not paid a toll, and I need to immediately call this number or whatever, and that's a big scam.
It is, and I suspect you're probably not the only one. A lot of listeners have gotten that scam because it's really spiked here in the past week. And this is a traditional spin on a phishing scam where they'll just send out, you know, thousands, potentially millions of these messages looking for someone to kind of take that bait and think that this might be a legitimate message or concern and then react to it. And how this one is working is these scammers are saying that there's a delinquency with an EasyPass toll or an unpaid toll, and you want to avoid those fines and penalties quickly. In order to do so, you need to click on a link that is in that text message, or they might provide a phone number for you to call and take care of it. And of course, that link is going to take you to a malicious website where it's going to look just like that state's portal or any type of payment that seems to be real, or maybe even something you might be familiar with. You know, we see these scammers copying these websites and they're flawless. They look just like them. And so then, you know, unfortunately, individuals might go on thinking they have that toll. And the reason that it's, you know, I think it's potentially happening right now is we're kind of on the tail end of spring break. So many people will have traveled to, you know, states where there are tolls. And here in Wisconsin, we don't have them, so we don't think a lot about it. But when you're traveling to those destinations that do, it's plausible you might think, well, maybe I missed one, or, you know, maybe the transponder didn't pick it up, and so I'll just hop on and pay it so I can avoid those other penalties, when in reality, it's all a scam.
Yeah, so don't do it.
Well, don't do it. What you want to do is just take a second to think about that. You know, ask yourself, did I actually even go through any tolls? Would this be, is that particular messaging applicable to where you were? But then really just go to that tolling agency directly. Don't pay with that link that they provided. Don't call that phone number. Just go directly to the website where you know it's legitimate. Hop on there and they'll let you know if you have a delinquent toll.
There you go. And you save yourself a bunch of money and a lot of headache and heartache if you do it the way Michael is suggesting. You can join in again, by the way. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Never sold a car online. I've always talked with, usually sold it in my own community. The last one I sold to my next door neighbor, which was really handy for a used car. But a lot of people are doing it online, and there are some scams to watch out for, aren't there, Michael?
There are. And interestingly, when I was younger, I did sell a motorcycle online, and this exact thing happened to me. And thankfully, I got cold feet and backed out of it, but ended up not paying. And what's happening with this is it's a take on the fake check scam. And what's happening is we're seeing consumers, and this is the messages for those that are going to be selling on platforms like Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, any type of avenue where we're selling online, and the scammers will reach out and they'll say they're very interested in the vehicle. And however, they're going to let you know for some reason they're not local, or they've got something going on, or they're busy and they can't come and look at it. But they really want you to hang on to it for them because they know that's the one. And so they offer to send a down payment or any type of payment in advance. And so they'll send that check. And then what will happen after it's received is that scammer will let that seller know, well, you know what? I mistakenly sent you a little bit too much. I want you to hang on to the deposit and hold the car for me. But if you wouldn't mind sending the rest back, I'd appreciate it. And what will happen is because of the way that the banking system and the timing that it works out is that seller will go ahead and deposit that check and it'll show up in their account and they'll have access to that money. And then they may unknowingly send that money to that that scammer. And then when you find out, when the bank, you know, 7 to 10 days later finds out that that check is fraudulent, they're going to pull that money back. And unfortunately, whatever you sent is gone. So really the red flag here is if anyone sends you an overpayment and says, hey, we just sent you too much money, there should be a lot of red flags flying up at that point. And we want you to just not take that money. And if anyone's also asking you to send back an overpayment, don't send that money. You're going to find out most likely that that check was in fact fake and didn't clear. And this is just one of those scenarios where when you're selling something online, you want to just take a little bit of extra effort to verify who you're selling it to is legitimate, is real, and double check so you don't put yourself in this situation.
Yeah, makes a whole lot of sense. Annie in La Crosse has a comment for us. Let's go there. Hi, Annie. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, you may not know this, but I make, not that I'm an artist, but I go to art shows, and there are people getting a hold of sites for art show applications and scamming artists. This almost happened to me. What artists have to be careful of is if you ask these scammers anything about the show, they don't answer it. And luckily, PayPal would not let me transfer money to these people. They said it was a fraud.
Wow. Tell me, what did you buy something from them or try to?
No, it's an application art show, like Art Fair on the Square or Off the Square or the Paoli Art Show. There are applications, and you fill out the application and you send in your money. And these people got a hold of a show that was in Illinois, and I had never been to that show. And what I did after the fact is I looked up the person who I was dealing with, and there was absolutely no information about them on the web. And then I looked at another show, and it seemed to be the same thing, and I looked who that person was, and they were nobody.
Well, Michelle.
Yeah, I mean, she's doing her research anything can be impersonated where there is going to be money in exchange and in gathering of information to attend in this application. So you have to check things out because they are making the websites look legitimate or just creating pop-ups, you know, new opportunities. How do you check out and confirm and verify something that's new? Well, they're probably going to need to have a permit in order to have a big event at a public facility. So checking with that municipality, is this really happening? What kind of other promotion is happening? Because you don't want to not support new opportunities.
Sure.
You need to be available for that. But being cautious who you're giving your money to and how you're making those payments and doing so in a secure fashion that you can hopefully get that money back. The credit card, if they'll take it, it sounds like PayPal had something built in here, which is excellent to hear in order to help protect people.
PayPal probably already had some experience.
That's right. That's right.
Annie, thanks for bringing it up. So be it an art show or any kind of show, you got to be careful. Thank you. Kathleen in Montello, we'll get to you in just a minute. A reminder, we're talking today with Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Bureau of Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Talk at WPR.org. Larry Mueller here. We're talking consumer protection issues today with our two folks from the DATCAP's division of our Bureau, I should say, of Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke. It's always great to have them come by. Questions, the number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk at WPR.org. Kathleen and Montello will give you a chance to join in. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
I was wondering, when you get these text messages saying that you have a toll or something like that, and I do just always ignore them, but then I was wondering, should you delete it? Should you block it? What should you do after you receive these?
Yeah.
I mean, one great thing that you can do is you can report it using the reporting feature to your telecommunications provider. And then make sure Consumer Protection is aware of it as well. And then it's when there's links in it that you could accidentally press if you were to fumble with your phone and hit the wrong message, I'd encourage deleting it so that way you don't accidentally hit anything and redirect your device where you don't want it to go.
Yeah, that makes very good sense. Thanks, Kathleen, for calling. Appreciate it. And by the way, we haven't given your number or your contact information. You mentioned that to Kathleen, so let's give that.
Yeah, the Consumer Protection Hotline at DADCAP is 1-800-422-7128. And you can go to our website at datcp.wi.gov, and there you'll be able to get fact sheets, communicate with us, file a complaint, just check out the consumer alerts, sign up for our newsletter.
Lots there. Ken in Janesville, what's on your mind?
Yes, I was had to switch airline reservations, and so the airline did not have an 800 number. And I was frustrated online trying to change it. So I thought, well, they've got to have a number. So I Googled a number or Googled a search for the airline 800 number. And I got one and I called it. And after 5 minutes on the phone with them, they were wanting information and all that. And I realized it was a scam. So I just hung up. And they actually called me a number of times afterwards. And I just finally told them, do not call me anymore. So you got to beware. Even doing a Google search for an 800 number.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael?
Ken is absolutely right. A little bit of due diligence when you're looking at those search results could really save yourself, because when you're having those search results, a couple things can happen. First is, we might see now, you can pay to have your particular website or tied to that keyword to show up first or near the top. And we'll see some of those that'll be labeled as sponsored. And if you're not really looking, they could potentially have very similar names, same very similar web addresses. The information's kind of the same. And we also see this other times where you'll see websites that are providing a service, and they're going to provide oftentimes a service you can do for free by yourself. But it just comes down to, in that search, looking and making sure you're landing on that legitimate company's website.
Yeah. Ken, thank you for calling. Philip in Wausau, what's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking the call. Great show, Larry. Anyway, when you do get one of these spam texts, you can often figure that out because they often are accompanied with a phone number from which the call emanated. So what you do is you look at the country code. Now, in the United States, the country code is 1. But I got one the other day where the country code was 63, and that was in the Philippines. Another one, 31, in the Netherlands. So you know that these aren't scam calls because the country code gives it away.
Michelle, comment?
Yeah, that's a great tip to be looking at that information. It's one piece to many different clues if you're looking for them. The problem is we're in a hurry and we don't always think to look for those clues, and we're reacting to being told we have an overdue notice in tolls and want to take care of business there. So excellent tip, looking for spelling errors. Just a reminder that there is spoofing where there's a misrepresentation on that caller ID and where something's coming from, but there is improvement with that. So it's another great tip.
Yeah, thank you, Philip. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@wpr.org. David in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I have a pickup truck, and I don't know, about a year ago or so, I got a letter from the Ohio Department of Motor Vehicles that I had not paid a toll. on their toll road. Now, I have not had my pickup outside of Madison or Wisconsin for about 10 years. So there was a email address there I could use to explain why I'm not going to pay this. And I typed it out and sent it in to them. A few weeks later, I got another letter. So, and this time the letter had a picture of a pickup of a truck, a commercial truck, with a Wisconsin license plate with my license plate number on it. But it was obvious not my truck. So I went to the state of Ohio's website and got a hold of somebody in their Department of Motor Vehicles and explained, one, that this was a commercial truck. My truck was a pickup. The license plate was yellow. Wisconsin places are white. And the upshot was, he said, probably somebody just made a fake license plate, took somewhere, you know, got a hold of my license plate number, put it on there, put Wisconsin on it. And the man was very nice. He canceled it. But if I hadn't been thinking about it, I might have just sent them a check.
Yeah. Wow, Michael.
Yeah, what David's explaining is something we've also heard about before, and it's just another variation on that text scam. I'm sorry, the toll scam. But what they're doing is they're finding a little bit more personal information that they're adding to that letter to make it seem more convincing. In this particular scenario, you know, that individual may have actually made a fictitious plate and was driving around. Another we're seeing where they might be photoshopping a picture to make it look like your plate is on there and it's going through that toll and add some. And we've heard this at a couple outreach events where victims have talked about they've got that same letter and thought it was legitimate because of that convincing picture. So David did the perfect thing by reaching out to the Ohio DMV directly, talking to someone there, and then vetting it through to show that it wasn't, in fact, his vehicle.
Yeah. And you mentioned information events, and you guys get around the state a little bit for that.
We do. We have a rather robust outreach program where we get out into the community, and we have presentations on a variety of topics. And what we'll do is we'll share what we're learning. We try and keep them up to date, so as new trends are coming through or things that we're seeing, we'll make sure we share those with the community so everyone can stay protected. They're free. All you need to do is just provide us with an audience and a location, and we'll come to you and make that presentation for you. And if you want to learn more, you can go to our website at datcp.wi.org or .wi.gov. I did it now myself, Larry. .wi.gov, and you'll find a list of all those presentations, and there'll be a link on how you can request one.
All right, there we go. Thank you, David. Appreciate the call. Dennis in Rosendale, your turn now. Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, hey, Larry. Hey, yeah, the reason I'm giving you a call, I have a question. I have an iPhone, and when you get a phishing scam or you get a some kind of a message that you want to delete, one of the options is to report this as a phishing scam, or, you know, report it as a fictitious message. When you hit that button and do that, who does that get reported to?
That goes back to your telecommunications provider, so whomever you have service with using your iPhone. So that's a built-in feature, and you'd be reporting it back there. So that's a great thing to do.
And if you do that, would you then also delete, or would you not delete that right away?
You would want to delete that, so that's not in there. And Michelle laid out perfectly why you may mistakenly go in there and think that's the wrong message, or it may look like a different one. But a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, I know a couple carriers now offer the option to delete and report as junk in one option.
One swoop.
So I would encourage everyone to use that feature.
Dennis, thanks again. Appreciate your call. Sarah in Middleton, on to you now. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I just had a question. I reserved recently an Airbnb for vacation, and in the process of reserving it, they asked for a photograph of my driver's license and a picture of me holding my driver's license. And I did it, and then I thought, oh, did I just give away? Is that safe or not, or legit or anything?
I can't say that we have heard of that. That a provider is doing that. If this provider is being really top-notch in doing background or security checks to who they're renting to. It could be a possibility. But the caution that we're having here is that there are scammers who post fake opportunities on these different platforms. And so once a consumer is confident that the property is legitimate and exists and you're really dealing with someone else, not a scammer, then, you know, asking why they need this information and then you're providing it in a secure manner, these could all be good steps and stages on both parties' behalf. It's getting to that stage where you're comfortable that you really know you're dealing with a legitimate provider that is causing hesitation.
And I don't know that I'd be emailing that back unless it was she was offering a secure place.
Yeah, that's that secure method of transmission, right? And you don't want to be moved off the platform either, because that is a telltale sign of a scammer, to move the conversation off the platform that they provide. So it's transmitting it securely somehow.
Yeah.
I would also consider at that point, if there's the option, is reaching out to, you had mentioned that you were at Airbnb, is reaching out to them directly and ask them if that's a regular practice. Because that, I'm glad that it raised a flag for you. And as we're talking, we haven't heard about that. But reaching out to them and saying, is this normal for you to do as a rental practice?
Or even a permissible practice. So, because normal, you might have a few, but is it a permissible practice that they on their platform allow providers to ask for that information?
Yeah, and if she's just asking you to email it back, I would say, well, I would want a secure way to send it through rather than an email, which email is about as open as you can possibly get comes to that sort of thing.
And I would just emphasize what Michelle said about staying on that platform. Like, if you're going to book through Airbnb, then communicate, share information, do all of it through Airbnb directly.
Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much for calling. Again, open lines get you on pretty quickly at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Emails, Janet emailed. She was recently at an airport. There was a major slowdown of checking in of bags, which led to a major backup in the security lines. Even though she has TSA pre-check, something was wrong that day. And in order to make my flight, she agreed to sign up for a trial with Clear, an alternative to TSA PreCheck. As soon as she got home, she canceled her free trial of Clear, but they do have her driver's license, her fingerprints, biometric data. Should she be worried?
I would just keep that in mind should Clear ever have a data breach, and you certainly could reach out to them to see what their disposal is of that information, the frequency, you know, the length they're going to hang on to it, the frequency of disposal, the method of disposal, to be sure that they do cleanse the system. And you know, there may be a method to request that it be disposed earlier.
Evelyn emailed us and says, please talk about the Medicare card scam. Everyone older than 65 who she knows is getting these calls every single day. Evelyn says she rarely answers, but when she does, she asks for the supervisor and the caller hangs up immediately. Many older folks don't know that Medicare doesn't send out new cards every year.
That is correct, and I'm glad Evelyn is raising awareness to that. Unfortunately, there are so many variations of these Medicare scams that we hear about, and they rise and fall during open enrollment or, you know, Medicare Advantage programs. And the key there is to just understand what information is so incredibly important to safeguard. And it really starts with that Medicare number, the Medicaid number, treating that like it's your Social Security number, because so many things can be done with that. And so if anyone's calling and asking for that number, that right there should be a stop point for you. Certainly legitimate Medicare is not going to call and ask you for the number because they have it. They also are aware of these scams that are going around, so they're going to be cognizant of that. If they need anything, they'll send that letter out and they'll give you that information. They're not going to call you looking for that. But also all the different variations of scams that take place, one of them that I think a lot of consumers or participants in the program may not be aware of is just giving out that number. Scammers will use that number to order products or services that will show up on your bill. And if you're not paying attention, they'll continue to just go ahead and go through. And if you're not, you know, responsible for that payment, but you're not really paying attention to that bill, that scammer is using your number to facilitate this fraud over and over and over again. So these little things that can happen where we think, well, you know, it's not my Social Security number, so it's not that important, and that's not true. I also like that Evelyn was taking the initiative to ask a question, ask for somebody else if there is that call to kind of vet it through, similar to what Annie did earlier, and saying, hey, I'm going to ask questions, see if this is legitimate. That will also give you an opportunity to say, all right, is this real or is it not? And oftentimes you'll find it isn't.
Mary in Minocqua, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to report an incident that just happened last week to my husband. He was trying to rent a car, and it was a reputable car rental place. And when he explained what he wanted, they told him that he had to go to Walmart and purchase something called a one card, which he did. And he put $500 cash on the card, came home. They wanted him to send a picture of the card front and back and send it to this number, which he did. So in the meantime, right after that, this salesperson called and said, oh, Mr. Mike, you have to go back and get another card and put $200 down on that. I thought you could pay your $500 and you owed $60. You could pay it when you picked up the car. Well, she checked with her supervisors, and that was not the case. So back to Walmart he went and to purchase another one card, paid $200, put $200 down on the card, took the pictures, sent it to this person, and only to find out shortly after that it was just a total scam. So yeah, he's out the car and the money.
$700 in the car, yeah.
Yeah, what we've found with these gift card scams is that if you realize you've been caught up in a scam shortly after this, if you reach out to the gift card company that you've purchased, they've been able to stop some of them from transpiring and then reload that onto a different card for you. I don't know when this happened. I think you said last week or so. It might be likely too late, but it is still worth the call to one card so they know that their cards are being targeted in scams. A few years back, it was certainly the Apple card.
Yeah.
That was the card to get. Then it was Amazon cards, but it's good to know which card is circulating. So thank you for reporting that. I'd encourage you to file a consumer complaint with us. Not that we'll likely be able to take action, but for that awareness and reporting, because we share information with our state and federal partners across the nation. And it will be good to get that message out that this is happening now in this way with rental car companies being impersonated. And be interesting to know how your husband found the number to make contact with what he thought was the reputable company and got tied up in the reservation that way and as part of the complaint. So if you'd reach out, you could go to datcp.wi.gov to just file directly online if you would like.
Okay, Mary, there you go. Oh, sorry for your loss. Dave in Madison, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to tell you about an internet scam that I got sucked into last week. And I'll start by saying I think of myself as a pretty, wily and aware consumer. But I got into a site that was probably questionable. I didn't know it at the time. They, a few minutes into the site, a message came across my screen. The whole screen was blocked with this supposed warning from Microsoft, big Microsoft letters. And I couldn't do anything, couldn't move my mouse, couldn't do, you know, see anything. It apparently covered all the movement that, you know, was there normally behind it. So, and it had an 800 number, which I called, and the person answered Microsoft. Then they basically walked, you know, they helped me get rid of the screen. It was just the escape key. And then they, unfortunately, I downloaded a viewer. So at that point, they were in, you know, watching what I was doing. They said I was at risk to all my finances. So I opened my financial sites. And thankfully, they were, my passwords weren't visible, but they could then see what I was doing. They told me that my bank would be calling, and after a few minutes, my quote-unquote bank called, and it was the name of my bank on the ID, but apparently that was also a scam. And this person said that I had, you know, a big credit card charge had happened for over $40,000, and they, you know, put me on hold. They're talking to their supervisor. Sorry, we can't get it back for you, was the end result. And then they, all this sounded legit. I was scared and, you know, thought I'd lost a lot of money and made big mistakes. At that point, they said the only way we can get the money back is to do something called a duplicate transaction. You should go to your bank, take out $40,000 of cash, and take it to a Bitcoin or some kind of, you know, machine like that. At that point, I knew I was being scammed. So I said, I just said directly to the person, I don't believe this. I'm going to go directly to my bank myself. And, you know, it wasn't far from my house. I had the time to do it. And then he said, oh, no, don't do that. And I said, if you're legit, I'll certainly call you back. And on the way to the bank, then the quote-unquote Microsoft person tried to call me repeatedly. When I got to the bank, found out, of course, there was no charges. This was all a scam. So I put extra security on my bank account. And, you know, I've been monitoring my accounts with notifications, for every large purchase since then. Thankfully, no loss. Had to ask my computer person to come in and looked over my computer and said, nope, the viewer was there, the viewer program, but nothing else had been able to install in it. So, cautionary tale, if there's an 800 number from and a Microsoft warning, do not call it. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Dave, thank you. Michael?
David just walked us through exactly what we talk about when we kind of refer to as a snowballing scam. And it all starts with that tech support pop-up. And even though they've been around for many, many years, they still are one of the most successful inception points into these scams. But what Dave was describing is it explains how scammers are having to get a little bit more complex, and they're having to stack these other types of complaints onto each other. And unfortunately, within those pop-ups, they are going to lead to fake phone numbers. They're going to lead to fake websites. They're going to purport to be Microsoft or another support agency, oftentimes the Federal Trade Commission or another governmental entity that says, hey, we're here to help you recoup your identity or recoup some of this money that's been lost. And then what we'll see is in doing so, they're going to start kind of coming at it from different angles. So we think that, you know, they might be suspicious here. So then we're going to kind of change tactic and say, well, now we're going to be able to help you over here and kind of keep you thinking about, well, is it real or is it not? And in doing so, it'll kind of keep you walking down further and further and further until the point that you might be too far. I was very happy to hear that Dave caught that red flag in advance, saw that, you know what, taking this money out. He did describe perfectly what we're seeing, where they're wanting their potential victims to take that money out and go to a cryptocurrency ATM and put that in, because at that point it becomes very, very difficult to get back. And so if anyone is asking you to take money and put it in one of these ATMs or these machines, please stop before doing so. Certainly talk to somebody else. Run it by someone who's not involved, is not in there. And I also want to also take a second that Dave talked about being savvy and being wily and understanding kind of what was going on. And that's really important to emphasize, because it shows how convincing and how complex these scams can be. That it isn't, you know, people who don't have an understanding or don't understand computers who are falling for them. Even people very well versed in technology and even have an awareness of the scams that we're talking about right now, those different little tweaks and variations in being there can change the whole scenario and make you think, well, this isn't what I heard about. This is different. This one is real. Dave talked about being scared, which of course pushes them into thinking, yeah, I just got to fix the problem. I'm not focused on how I got here. I'm focused on how I get to fixing it. And that's how sometimes you lose money. But a lot of great steps Dave took on the back end.
Yeah, sure did. As he was talking, I was thinking back to the gal who calls. This is several years back, but she called and actually had her entire bank account emptied. And they even, she had a $3,000 or $5,000 reserve line of credit, and they'd even borrowed the money out of it. So not only did she lose everything, but then she had an additional $3,000 or whatever it was.
I remember that. Yeah, that was sad.
Oh, what a sad, sad story. That's what could happen. Dave, I'm glad it didn't happen to you. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to another caller, and we will in just a minute. But a reminder, we're talking consumer protection issues with Michelle Reinen and Michael Donkey from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within our DATCP. I'm Larry Mueller. At 12:30 today, we visit Baraboo to hear more about the Circus World Historic Site. We'll cover the newest exhibits and learn a little history along the way, so that's going to be fun. Right now, we're dealing with consumer protection concerns. Great to have Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke back from our Bureau of Consumer Protection to be with us today. And Reinen Cable has something for us, so let's go there. Reinen, hello.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So recently, me and my wife switched cell phone providers and got brand new numbers. And since then, it is unrelenting. 15 to 30 scam or spam calls a day, even after we've registered our numbers on the do not call list. Is there anything we can do to stop this? It takes 3 to 5 minutes to report each number, but it just does not stop.
Michael?
One thing, Ryan, you could check with your new carrier to see if they have any features that would help you deter some of those. Two things that we always encourage is, one, checking with them if there are any software or programs or apps that they'll provide to you, oftentimes for free, that will help sort some of those out. And then the second is checking what features your particular phone might have. There, as we've seen more and more updates coming out, these phone providers are not necessarily the carriers, but the phones themselves with those updates are adding software and protection apps that will screen some of those out. So that might reduce some of them.
Yeah, that would be so. Both of those things should hopefully really help. So give it a shot, Reinen. Thank you for calling. Jeff and Racine, your turn. Hi, Jeff. Jeff, are you there? Yeah. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I have a quick question about financial or investing.
Yeah.
With companies that come up on the internet, how do you check to see if they're registered? Is it through the Securities Exchange Commission to see if their number is up to date?
You're going to want to check things out with the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions to be sure that they are an entity that can do business in our state. And so you can reach out to the Department of Financial Institutions and you can see if there's been any complaints against particular entities, as well as just get their basic information on how to vet an investment from them.
Yeah. And they could, scammers could still be using a company that is, in fact, working in Wisconsin.
Well, they can impersonate one.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Absolutely. And so you want to be sure you're actually doing business with that real legitimate company. Great point, Larry, especially if you're looking online. You'll want to try and connect in person with a representative to be sure that they are legitimate.
Yeah. Jeff, thank you. Appreciate the call. Michelle in Madison, we go to you next. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have kind of an unusual someone trying to scam my daughter, actually. She rented a car through Budget, and I did hear the rental scam earlier, but this one is quite different. I also want to call out something that Dave said, the fact that I think there's a lot of people out here who go, whoa, I'm smart. Like, I feel like I'm a really intelligent person. I'm really savvy on the internet. And so a lot of people feel humiliated when they're scammed, and so they don't reach out and tell people about it. And I think it's important for people to actually tell people so that they're not, like, in this situation. I think what you're doing is wonderful because, to be scammed and then feel humiliated about it is really a legitimate thing. But my daughter had rented a car. She returned the car. She did what, I've taught her is take your video of everything, make sure there's nothing on it. And then, it was like 3 months later, she got a letter that said that there was damage done to this car and there was a significant amount of money owed to them. So we should just call and give them our credit card number or send a check. And I said, honey, this doesn't seem like, can I see your video? And she said, yes. And she showed them to me. But, they had this car and a picture of it with damage. And so I called and I, said, well, this wasn't her damage. And I asked to see the supervisor. This whole process took 2 to 3 weeks, and she was all nervous because she didn't have money to pay for this. And I...
Oh, we lost Michelle.
And, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Michelle, you broke up. We lost you, but I kind of see where this is going, Michelle.
Yeah, I think Michelle to Michelle here. It's a great connection here, and Michael's in the room too, so we got it all. But no, I think I'm hopeful that because she got in contact with the direct rental car company that they did identify it was a scam. I mean, things come to mind. Michael and I listen to these synopsis and always all these possibilities that come to mind. Did this company have a data breach where someone was able to obtain the information and then put pieces together and really then develop a scam situation where you're going to pay money to them? So keeping the video was an excellent move there to be sure that we moved through it. If you get a letter like that and it's such a delay, checking if there's been a reported breach, but that doesn't mean that there hasn't been one. Just a scammer piecing other information together and taking pictures of different rental cars because they all look pretty similar, especially when it's well known that this rental car company uses these brands of vehicles manufacturers and this one is this manufacturer. So you could just easily just take photos from wherever and be piecing that together. And that is one of the things I think we say most often. Always go back to the reliable resource or contact with the company that has reached out to you if you think it could at all be legitimate, and be sure you're communicating directly with them using contact information you've obtained yourself, not through a pop-up, not through the email, not through the text message. And if you've gotten it on the website, being sure it's the real website and not an imposter website, which can be challenging. But going back to the rental contract, the contact information and the rental agreement that you had to reach out. So I'm hopeful that this turned out well for Michelle.
Yeah, and Michelle.
And
her
daughter.
Yeah, and your daughter, Michelle. I'm sorry you broke up there and we kind of lost you, but certainly appreciate your call. In 30 seconds here before we have to go to break, James wonders, do any of these people ever get prosecuted, and what law enforcement agencies are responsible for bringing these crooks to justice?
Well, they are held accountable, and that question is pretty broad. It kind of gets into specifically what type of act or actions are taking place. So we work together hand in hand with a lot of law enforcement agencies, along with the Department of Justice, to bring accountability to some of these bad actors. But then we also work with them to kind of share information and make sure they can go ahead and track down those criminals as well. So the answer to the question is we all are.
And we can talk some more about that after we take a look at the news. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, or DATCAP as we've been calling it, will be with us till 12:30. We'll take a quick break for the news and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. We're talking consumer protection right now with our guest, Michelle Reinen, administrator of the DATCAP's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Michael Domke is the director of DATCP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Questions for them, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. And we've had some folks who have contacted our call screener and say, hey, would you repeat that DATCAP number again to call? So, Michael, you want to do that?
You bet. 1-800-422-7128.
1-800-422-7128. That's the number. Duane in Verona has something for us. Let's go there.
Yes, thank you. I have been dealing with the AARP Membership Center, and I've had a subscription for many years. And in the past, I've had the AARP magazine sent to my mother, who is going on 98. And so recently, and all that's been successful until recently, I asked for subscriptions to be sent to a few other of my relatives, two precisely. What they did was, instead of sending those, they sent an extension of my AARP membership to end in, let's see, I think it was 2041. And I said, I responded to Cheryl, who answered this call. I said, by that time, I'll probably be underground. And so I said, I would like for you to, I sent a letter then explaining all this and all the information. And then I haven't heard from them. That was back in February, letter dated February 17th, and I haven't heard back from them. I can send them another letter with all this stuff in it and the details, but what are the possibilities you could help me along these lines?
Yeah, you could file a complaint with our organization, and we'd reach out to them to try and mediate the situation and get that reversed and corrected for you. And I have pretty high hopes that would get resolved pretty quickly. So you can go directly online if you want and file the complaint there. It's datcp.wi.gov. These guys here have me rethinking our website here for a minute now from earlier. Or just call the Consumer Protection Hotline, and they can mail you out a form. And that number again is 1-800-422-7128. They'll be happy to send you a form that you can mail back to us.
And get that taken care of. Duane, there you go. Thank you so much. Catherine in Beaver Dam, on to you. Hi, Catherine.
Good afternoon. Thank you. This happened to me a year ago, but I have been very curious. I received a letter from a lending institution that someone was trying to take out loans in my name. And then I received from medical people that people were trying to find out more information. So I discovered that the state of Wisconsin, the DMV, sent a photocopy of my license plate to Georgia. And then I proceeded to freeze everything. Not that everything's been fine, but I'm just curious to know, how can our DMV make the decision to send, without my permission,
that information, a copy of your license. Michael?
With Catherine, without a little bit more information, I'm not sure why they would send that. Usually, if the DMV is going to send a copy of the plate or any personal information, it's upon request. And oftentimes has to have a valid reason behind that. So I don't know what that would be, but I do have a little bit of faith that they wouldn't just arbitrarily be sending that information over there. One thing I do want to applaud you on is putting that freeze on your credit when you started getting these red flags and noticing that, and then continuing to monitor your credit. Those are two things that we would encourage anyone who starts to see these little signs or gets notifications that potentially their identity is being used without their consent. Those are things that we want to make sure everyone is doing. And then also visit our website to learn a few more things about how you can make sure you're checking out those red flags, paying attention to them, and how you stay protected.
Yeah, you've got a title, isn't it? Isn't there a story or something, or printed information, not printed, but information online?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a great identity theft consumer tips fact sheet that we have that gives a lot of different resources for monitoring your identity or locking things down, if you will. And to that point, one thing with the Department of Transportation, you can opt out to have your records released on general records requests that they would be required to fulfill when people do ask for mass records of particular things that they have control over, and through public records, they need to release those, and sometimes marketers get a hold of them or different things. So consumers have an option to complete a form with the, I think, DMV side of Department of Transportation to opt out of being included in those lists. And that information is probably on our fact sheet, but it's also on the Department of Transportation webpage. Not sure if that's how your information went to Georgia, since you're specific to a plate or what there, but that's for, you know, every one of a step that you can take.
Yeah. Catherine, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And we'll turn our attention to Paula in Madison next. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I received an email from, I think it was called Geek Tech or something. And that they had automatically renewed my thing for another year. It was late at night. I'd just come back from being gone for a few days. So I thought to myself, I better quickly, you know, cancel this, because I don't think I had this service. But I went to bed instead because it was late. And the next morning I got to thinking, I don't think I have this service. So I checked all of my, you know, my credit cards to make sure nobody had taken any money out. And I'm kind of still wondering if I probably should just ignore this, because I don't think it's really mine. But sometimes, you know, I do sign up for things and then forget I did it. So
yeah,
but I use a personal person for my computer. So
yeah,
the one thing I would check, Paul, in that email is if they said they renewed it, is what payment was used to renew it. If they are just sending you an invoice saying that you're going to owe them and there hasn't been any payment made, and you don't recognize the service and have never signed up for it, I think you can probably assume that's a scam email. Oftentimes, we'll see these types of approaches where they'll send either directly from that particular service saying you owe us and we renewed you, or we're oftentimes we'll see PayPal or some kind of third-party payment portal or service provider will send an invoice saying this purchase was made and now you owe money for whatever that might be. In your case, it was this subscription or a service. So I think in this one, it probably is a scam. If you really think that it might be legitimate or you signed up, I would not respond to any contact information in that email. I would instead just look for a legitimate contact info for that Geek Tech or whoever they are. Call them directly and then see if you really had signed up, either knowingly or unknowingly.
Paula, there you go. Thank you so much. Annie in Madison, your turn. Hi, Annie.
Hello there. Thank you for having this show. I wanted to share about a scam I learned about that thankfully I figured out was a scam. And then I also had a question. So last year I got a phone call while I was at work. Actually, I got two phone messages. They said they were the Dane County Sheriff's Office and that I needed to call them back right away. And I ignored the first message, and then I got a second message, and I thought, well, okay, I guess I'll call because I don't know. So I call, and, same person answers saying they're Dane County Sheriff's somebody, and there's like office sounds in the background. and they say that you were, you know, you were supposed to show up at court. You got subpoenaed and you didn't show up. And it's like, what? And then they said, yeah, 30 days ago, somebody brought you. It was very, very intricate. Like somebody brought you a summons and you didn't show up and now you owe this money. And it sounded so real. And I was at work and he said, so you have to come right now to the Dean County Courthouse. And I'm like, well, I'm at work. And can I call you back? And he's like, no, we can't end this call because a lot of people try to run away from these things or something. And this is when I started to get suspicious. But it was scary. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to tell work I have to leave. And as I was talking to him, I started looking on my computer to, this is something I think people know, but it's good to know. You can right away internet, like, is there a scam about Dane County Sheriff, blah, blah, you know? And something came up saying that there was. And while the guy was on the phone, I actually called the Dane County Sheriff's Office from my work phone. And they're like, yeah, it's a scam. So two things. I'm not sure how this guy was going to make money, except that maybe he would say, oh, now if you don't come and just pay over the phone. But I wanted to warn people about that because it's scary when, like, police or judges or something call.
Yeah.
My question is, would it work, like, in terms of catching somebody like this? If this happens to somebody, could they alert the police and then call the person back while they're with the police? Would that help catch somebody who's doing this?
Well, I love your enthusiasm to help us catch these individuals. There's concern with keeping you on the line with them that they manipulate individuals and they would continue to get more information that they would sell. And most of these individuals are overseas. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done with national and international partners to break down the rings, the call centers that manipulate these scams. So we'd rather you just disengage and hang up on them. But to your point of how they make money, you're onto it. They would say, oh, well, you can take care of this by just transmitting money. Or we heard a story earlier going and withdrawing cash and depositing it into the BTM, the Bitcoin time machine, to safeguard your finances or to make that payment. So there's lots of different ways that they will manipulate the scams. And they use law enforcement as one of their tools, because people will react to the situation. They don't want to be in the wrong with authorities. So why government and law enforcement are some of the highest impersonated entities that they use.
It's interesting because there was a person, just to go along with the officer part of it, there was somebody who I believe called the show, whose mother didn't even have a computer, but had been talked into going out and buying a computer by the person who she'd talked to on the phone. And so she had gone to the house and it actually called the police, and an officer came over, and the person called, the scammer called while the cop was there. And he said, well, let me take that call. And so he's talking to the guy. And the guy's trying to talk the cop into the whole thing. So it was quite an affair. Obviously, except she bought a computer, it was quite a circus.
And I will just emphasize, law enforcement agencies are aware of this. They know that they're being impersonated. And so if you get one of these phone calls and any of those red flags, it's okay to hang up and just find that legitimate phone number and call them back. If and by some crazy chance it was real, they're not going to be mad at you for hanging up and calling back. They're probably going to thank you for making sure it was a legitimate call.
Yeah. Annie, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Don in Laval, on to you. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, and thank you for your show. I had three text messages from someone who said that I owed money for Easy Pass. I was delinquent. I never used Easy Pass, and I just ignored those text messages. But it had my first name, you know. It said Donald. Da da da. And so, you know, I never use Easy Pass. Apparently, that's something that you use in the where you go through a toll or something.
Yeah, and we were talking about that earlier, but it's okay to repeat a little bit for sure, Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. The state of Wisconsin, the entire state got hit really hard this weekend, Friday through Monday. I was at an event with a whole bunch of people, and we all got it at the same time on Sunday afternoon. So they came from Easy Pass, and they came from WISC DOT, trying to be the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. I received them both as well, one Friday and again one on Sunday, and they had my name on it too, and they're just trying to get people to click on that link and make that payment for that toll, because no one wants to be overdue with a tolling agency. We want to be able to travel freely, and I certainly haven't gone anywhere where there's tolls in any recent time period where I would owe that payment. So it's just a distraction. It's misdirection, and lots of different links in there for impersonating websites, trying to get people coming off a spring break to make those payments.
Don, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Angela in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Angela.
Oh, hi. Over the last couple of years, I've received letters saying that one was from Ascension Medical Providers saying that their data was breached, or my data, their data was breached, so my data was in danger of being used by somebody else. And the letter encourages us to sign up for free credit monitoring and ID protection services. So I signed up with one called IDX. And now every week I get an email from IDX, and they offer different services. And one of them is to find out what is on the dark web with my name. So I thought, oh, it's like a credit report. It's a report to tell you what's out on the dark web. So I opened up the box, and it asked for my name and then my Social Security number. And I thought, this doesn't seem right, because they should already have it. So first of all, are those credit monitoring services legitimate, like this IDX? And then why should I care what's on the web, dark web? Because aren't they supposed to be monitoring that for me, so I don't need to monitor it?
Michael, go ahead.
There are a lot of legitimate credit monitoring services out there, and certainly, as we've talked about today, there's going to be certainly some that are going to be scams and just looking to garner information. I would feel a little bit confident about if you're receiving a legitimate data breach notification and they're offering credit monitoring services, that the companies that they're offering that service through are probably going to be legitimate. Now, the additional services that are added onto those are something each individual is going to have to decide for themselves on whether that serves a purpose for them or if there's a benefit to it based on what they're paying. The concern about the information on the dark web is really the same as the information being anywhere. And that just comes down to making sure you're proactively monitoring your credit, paying attention to your credit report, putting that freeze on, looking for those signs of identity theft, and then reacting to them when you see them. It's unfortunately, in today's day and age, we're seeing data breaches occurring somewhat rather frequently, and so the information is going to be out there. And that's why it's always so important for everyone to understand what they should be looking for and what steps they can take to stay protected.
Angela, thank you for calling. Mark in Wisconsin Dells, what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to highlight the story that was on public radio yesterday regarding the Washington Post article about the lady who lost $600,000. She had taken this out of Morgan Stanley. And 3 points that were important, I think. One is the scammers took 2 years to groom her before they got her money. The second thing was that Morgan Stanley told her that it was a scam, and she did it anyway. And then the bad thing, of course, was they didn't call the police. I think they should have called the police, but they didn't. And then finally, the one thing that's a kick in the butt is now, since she took out her retirement saving, she owes the Internal Revenue Service $191,000, and she can't get out of that. Mm. So pretty wild story, but it was in the Washington Post, and very interesting.
Yeah.
And I do still tell people, Larry, that I tell the scammers that I work for identity theft assassins.
Okay. Mark, thank you very much. And I remember that story. It's terrible.
It is terrible. And the thing here is that he expressed 2 years of grooming. These very high-dollar scams, most of them are ongoing, long-term scams that are happening. We see them across the board with romance scams is one area, investment scams is another. And a reputable company told the individual that this is a scam, but they are so invested in the opportunity or the relationship, or they've created such a real environment for the individual that there's no navigating around and there'll be no belief that they could be defrauded. And it's so important, we're learning in the psychology of this, that we create safe spaces for people to be able to tell their story and not blame the victims, but put all the blame on the scammer and try and create the environments that we can help them navigate these spaces to get out of the scams. And you can see the huge repercussions for this of this tax debt that will be out there for this individual. But now how can we take this life lesson that this person's experienced and translate it to our friends, family, loved ones, and be mindful of that and try and keep it from happening to them?
And in the last minute, I did want to bring up how far they will go. The 2 years reminded me of the fraudsters who are impersonating DirecTV representatives, and even the scammers went so far as to send a consumer a new DVR system.
It is. This is a unique one for us, and why we wanted to highlight is because in this case, they were reaching out and they were promoting an upgrade to that particular box and that equipment, and they actually did send the equipment, and the equipment worked, and they had a follow-up call to install it. And so it shows the level they're going to try and make it seem just how convincing it is, and then try and get that payment for that equipment and then set them up on maybe another payment plan to get that personal information. But quite an investment to get that.
To get that money.
Yes.
Boy, lots of ways out there, and we'll look forward to your next visit. We'll learn what the heck's up next. We didn't get to everything, and I'd say go to the Department of Consumer, go to datcp.wi.gov, and you're going to find out about a whole lot more scams that are going on. And Michelle and Michael, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Really appreciate it. Michelle Reinen's the administrator in the division, and Michael Domke is the director of the DATCAP Bureau of Consumer Protection. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the circus in Baraboo. I'm Larry Mueller. Step right up, step right up. It's time to talk about the circus in Wisconsin. And one way to immerse yourself in this dazzling and unbelievable world is to head to Baraboo, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here. And today we're going to talk about the Circus World Historic Site and a couple of guests for you today. One is Georgia Stevenson. She's the operations manager at Circus World. Georgia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. I like your musical choices.
I do, too. I think it's a cool way to start. Jennifer Crock is our other guest. She's the curator of Circus History at Circus World. And Jennifer, welcome to you.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having us.
That's great. We haven't talked about Circus World in a long, long time, so I'm really glad to have you with us today. And as you listen in to our two guests talk, I hope you'll join in. Want to hear from you. Let us know about your trip to Circus World. Maybe you grew up in Baraboo or that area and live there now. Why do you appreciate a community that embraces the circus? What about that? Give a call at any rate with your questions or your experiences to 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Georgia, for those who haven't been to Circus World, give us a bit of history of the site.
Oh, gosh. Well, Circus World opened for its very first day, July 1st, 1959. And that day forward, we were part of the state. We were gifted over to the state, and we've been here in Baraboo for 66 years now, and looking great for 66, I have to say. And boy, we've got just an enormous collection here of, I mean, you name it. Wagons, costumes, buildings, very unique items that can't even be grouped into one group, which I'm sure Jen could elaborate on. But there really is something here for everybody.
You know, it's interesting to me because the genesis for this was the Ringling Brothers. And, you know, I've asked myself, and I'm sure others have too, who were they, and why did they choose to start a circus in Wisconsin?
That's the question we get all the time. Why Baraboo? People come because it's a circus museum, but they're interested to know why it's here. And the reason for that is the Ringling Brothers, five boys who, you know, lived throughout Wisconsin and Iowa as young boys, were in Baraboo at the time. Their family lived here when they decided to start a circus in 1884. And shortly after that, they established their winter quarters there, which is where they regrouped every winter to get ready for the next season of the show. So they started building along the Baraboo River here in 1886 with their first winter quarters building. And they were here every winter until 1918. And so that's the reason we're here, because when we opened up in 1959, we started using two of those original winter quarters buildings, the Ring Barn and the Camel House. So those were where people could see exhibits in 1959 from the beginning, is the places where they trained the horses in the off season and where the camels and the zebras were housed throughout the winter.
It's really pretty cool. And Jennifer, let's get you involved. Would you share some of the bit of history on the historic buildings, Ringlingville buildings, that you have?
Yeah, so we have a number of buildings here that they're all National Historic Landmarks because they played such an important part in the Ringling Brothers Circus, which was the biggest circus for a number of years. And circus was the primary form of entertainment for people because, you know, they traveled to large cities, they traveled to small rural areas, everybody got to go see it, and that's where they saw exotic animals for the first time, and that's where they were able to see these amazing acts. But in the wintertime, they would go back to their winter quarters, to prepare for the next season. And so we have buildings here on our grounds that were used to house the animals. We have the office building where they developed the show for the next year. They determined what the advertising was going to look like. There's buildings that were where they sewed the costumes and got everything ready for the wardrobe. And so all of those buildings are here, and visitors can see them when they visit Circus World, as well as new buildings that house exhibits and show things about the circus, and, of course, our Big Top show as well.
I'm thinking about those old buildings. How are you working to preserve those buildings?
Yeah, there's lots of exciting stuff happening with that right now. In the past handful of years, we've received 3 Save America's Treasures grants from the National Park Service. The first one is almost in completion. It was on the Ringling Brothers office building. And so, we like to say it's the most expensive house in Baraboo because there's a lot of restoration work that has gone into that. But it's kind of amazing, this little unassuming white frame house is where the biggest show in the country was being, run out of every winter. We also received a grant on our 1901 Animal House, so work is starting to begin on that. And then most recently, last year, we received another grant to work on our Bagot Horse Barn. So the intent is to bring all of these back to the 1915 period, which is when all of the buildings that we have here on the grounds were being used at that time. And so we want everyone to understand really how complex this organization was and how much work was being done here every winter.
Yeah. And this is no small place. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to remember how many acres, but it's a considerable amount.
Yep, 64 acres grounds here and, 30-some buildings. We have a lot going on.
Georgia, what's the draw of a circus? What connection do people feel when they go to a circus?
Well, I think the biggest connection that folks might feel in the audience is that with who they came with. The circus is an art form where you can have the great-grandparents, the grandparents, the parents, and the kids all together enjoying the same performance for different reasons. And it's timeless in that way. It's always been a place to inspire and bring awe and joy and laughter to everyone. Using performance in the air and using clowns and using horses. And there's just so many ways to put the show together that will resonate with different audiences. But yeah, it's that connection to your family or to the folks you bring with you. I think that's the most important.
Yeah, I would agree with you. When I was a very young child, my grandma took my brother and my sister. I only had one brother at the time. We added another, mom and dad did later. But she took us to the circus. And, I was probably 6 maybe. So that was that would be a long time ago. But I remember being just absolutely amazed at the people and the trapeze and the animals. And one thing I remember was Grandma said, well, you're going to have to share a soft drink, a pop, she called it. And we had to share one pop for the 3 of us. You got one sip each, and that was about it. That's for some reason that sticks out in my mind. I'm not sure why, but I also remember at the time I was just absolutely amazed at what was going on. And I think even today now, as you visit Circus World, there are a lot of amazing things for the whole family to see.
Definitely. And you mentioned your memory about the pop, and I think that, the circus is very multisensory. So you're going to have those early memories, whether it's something amazing you see or some incredible sound, the aroma of the popcorn or the cotton candy, and certainly the tastes. Inside of our Big Top, there's not a bad seat in the house, and you're right up close and personal seeing people in the air flying and seeing horsemanship on full display, and it's really remarkable to see it in such an intimate setting.
Yeah, and over the years when I visited Circus World, it always takes my mind back to that first visit with Grandma Mueller to the circus. But it's been a few years since I've been there, and the circus, I know now it's opening April 21st, if I'm not mistaken. There are always new attractions and new exhibits and new things to see, Jennifer. Maybe you could talk about some of those a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Always new things to see here. Our wagon collection is phenomenal. It's the largest collection of circus wagons in the world. But extra exciting this year is we just received 4 wagons on loan from Feld Entertainment, including the Bell Wagon. And that has a really special history to us because it was commissioned by the Ringling Brothers for their 1892 circus season. And it was built right here in Baraboo. Their cousins, the Molars, had a wagon shop in downtown Baraboo, and so they built the frame, and then the carvings came from the Milwaukee Ornamental Carving Company, and the bells were created by the Centennial Bell Foundry of Milwaukee, all to make this beautiful wagon that played music. You know, there's 9 bells on there that can play songs, and we are so excited to be able to have that back here in Baraboo where it began. And so that will be on display here. The last time it was here was in 2013, so people haven't been able to see it. I actually had never seen it in person until just, last month, because I only started here 6 years ago. So it was an amazing thing to see. So that'll be exciting for people. And I also just worked on an Iron Jaw exhibit that is on display in our Feld Visitor Center. And for those who aren't in the circus world, they might not know what Iron Jaw is, but it's a traditional aerial act where performers hang by their teeth. So they have mouthpieces, and they are able to swing and spin and descend and do all of these amazing feats by hanging by their teeth. And so it's a pretty amazing thing to see. We have beautiful photographs that show this this act happening, as well as posters, a number of costumes and other things. So people can learn all about this really interesting circus act by visiting Circus World this year.
Your jaw's going to drop when you see the Iron Jaw.
You got it. That's what we're hoping.
Oh, man. Georgia Stevenson, operations manager at Circus World, and Jennifer Kroc, the curator of circus history at Circus World. Having fun talking with them about Circus World, and certainly inviting your questions or comments or maybe your own experience visiting there. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Just a quick note, tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll be talking about building a pollinator garden to begin the show, and then you'll get some tips on springtime pruning as well. That's tomorrow at 11. Right now, though, we are visiting about Circus World in Baraboo with Georgia Stevenson and Jennifer Kroc. And again, you can join in. The numbers 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I want to just go back to the wagons for a minute, because it seems to me that a wagon is a major symbol of the circus. And you talked about the bell wagon, but how else do circus performers and vendors use the wagons?
You know, the wagons are definitely a big part of the circus because they're used for all different things. There are many different types of wagons. Of course, we think about the really decorative ones, which often will have a band on top in a parade, something like that you can see. But there's also utilitarian wagons that just haul all the stuff, because if you think about before circuses traveled by rail on train, they were overland. So they were just going from place to place, putting everything in their wagons, and then going to the next town to perform. And so all of the equipment to, you know, for the dining tent to make the food, all of the costumes, all of the animals obviously had to be accounted for too. So we have all of these different types of wagons. There's music wagons, you know, calliopes, that's something that, you know, could be heard from miles away that would draw people to come to the circus. And so our collection, we have, you know, over 250 historic vehicles here at Circus World. It represents traveling shows of all types and sizes, because there were small, what were called dog and pony shows that weren't as large as the Ringling Brothers shows. And we have a little bit of everything. Mm. And we have an amazing wagon shop here at Circus World that does restoration of these wagons as well. So bringing them back to their former glory, because occasionally, you know, we have gotten wagons that were donated to us that had been used as, you know, chicken coops or other storage for many years and didn't look like they did when they were on the circus.
Joe in Chippewa Falls, what's on your mind?
Hey, hello, Larry and guests. I would just like to add in that the Circus Museum Park there is also the new home for the last couple of years for the Rogues and Ruffians Renaissance Fair.
Oh.
And that brings people. There's blocks long line of people that come see that, and they also see the museum. But the really interesting part is in when we're setting up Friday afternoon, evening, over the loudspeakers, they play the circus music full blast. And then people, while you're in costume, you have to put your garbage into the clown head garbage cans.
Joe,
those
thanks.
Garbage cans are very popular.
I bet. I wonder how many people have had their picture taken next to, it's probably more garbage. No other garbage cans have been photographed as much as those. I would bet. And you know, Joe talking about his event, I mean, it seems really appropriate to me. And it reminds me, we should talk more about the performances that go on. I mean, the circus performances that go on. I mean, give us more detail, perhaps, on what we're going to see this year.
Oh, you betcha. So our performance season kicks off on May 16th. The museum opens April 21st, like you said, but then our live performances start May 16th. And you can see everything from a flying trapeze act outside on the green right next to the Baraboo River. You can participate in the Kids World Circus, which is where kids use their imagination and participate in the show and create their own circus. And then, of course, our Big Top Show, which is the highlight of the season. And this year, we have a theme, which is holidays. And it can be any holiday, classic, kooky, not so well known, whatever floats your boat. But we are celebrating holidays. And you will see horsemanship. You will see world-class juggling family. We have a wonderful clown named Chase, beloved by the kids. And we have our ringmaster, Robert Trader. We've got a Russian swing act opening the show. And for the first time, we will have a motorcycle on a high wire in the Big Top. And it's quite an act in itself. So very exciting this year.
It sounds like it. Neil in Green Bay, what's on your mind?
I was born in Baraboo and grew up. Mom and Grandma took us to the opening day of the Circus World Museum. We heard Chappie Fox give his speech, and later that summer, I believe the Ringling Brothers did their last show under canvas at the Sauk County Fairgrounds. We were there for that also. And my favorite memory is the steam calliope. We lived a little over a mile away from the museum, and when they cranked that thing up, we could hear it clear as day. Wonderful job.
Great story. Do you get those kinds of stories, Georgia, from people when they stop in?
We do. We'll get, whether it's the grandparents bringing the grandkids or the parents bringing their kids, wanted to kind of relive those memories. But, you know, we hear it a lot. Oh, I came here when I was this high, and I remember this and that. And it's just indelible memories that are created in the circus, and especially at Circus World in Baraboo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you've got some upcoming events. I know there's a military service day, for example, which is free to military members.
That's right. On May 24th, we have a special program in the morning with speakers and singers and musicians. And then the whole day is open for no charge for active and retired military and their families. And it's a wonderful event and some very moving moments, even here at the circus. But it's very important to us to do that. That's the second weekend we're open in May.
Yeah. And of course, the World Anniversary Days. And people can, before I even forget about it, how do people find out about all of the events? I've been online to your site, but what's the site again?
We're at circusworld.wisconsinhistory.org.
circusworldwisconsinhistory.org. And there is a fee, a normal fee, entrance fee, and so forth to get to. I didn't find that it was, I don't see that it's all that. It's certainly not out of line with what you see. How long does the average person hang out there? You could stay a long, long time at Circus World.
Well, I'll tell you something. I have worked here for only 3 years, but I still haven't seen everything yet. I don't know about you, Jen.
Not quite. You know, I'm getting closer, but there's just so many nooks and crannies. So you can spend all day here. If you look at all the exhibits and go to the performances, there's so much to see.
Yeah, there is indeed. And the people of Baraboo have really embraced this whole thing, have they not? The community itself?
I think it's like second nature here. Like, we don't even really see it as the circus. It's just part of who we are. You know, you drive around town and there's wagon wheel bike stands, and you go to the post office and there's circus posters. The jeweler, the pack and ship, it's just everywhere. And it's just part of the DNA of Baraboo.
Yeah, it is indeed. And I used to have occasion to travel there fairly often because I had when I was a young man, I had a young lady who lived in Baraboo that I would occasionally come and visit. And I can remember going to the Circus World with her on more than one occasion. And we always had a lot of fun on those dates, as I would call them now. I don't know what they'd call them now, a visit probably or something. not a date, but it was a date to me, and I think it was to her as well, and always a very, very good time. And I bet if you just typed in Circus World Museum, your site will pop up.
For sure. Circus World Baraboo, Wisconsin History, Wisconsin Historical Society. You can find it a number of ways.
Georgia, Jennifer, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's brought back a lot of fine memories for me, and I bet it has for a lot of listeners and others, maybe some curiosity, and I got to get over there and see it. So thank you both. Georgia Stevenson is Operations Manager at Circus World, and Jennifer Kroc is Curator of Circus History at Circus World. So much fun to talk with them. And I imagine we'll be doing it again sometime down the road. And thank you for joining us today. This and all our shows, a team effort. Clara Neipert, Joel Patnott, our producers, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn with us today, but Jeff Robbins also is often with us. Our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks again for listening. Hey, listen to that music. Doesn't that get the circus in your blood going? ¶¶